Hey everyone, I am back with Brooklyn to tell you more about
Make Crate.
We are loving it. We are on the road this summer to finish filming for the documentary, and one of the very few things we brought with us was our
Make Crate.
Brooklyn, tell people who don't know what Make Crate is.
Make Crate is a fun, hands-on electronics kit paired with an online platform to teach your kids coding fundamentals and engineering skills.
That's right. And there are so many fun things you can do with it. You can make
electronic games, instruments, clocks, a burglar alarm, and lots more.
And lots more fun stuff. And there's no technical expertise required. Where can people find out more about Make Crate?
Go to makecrate.club/SR to order your Make Crate today. And make sure to thank them for this week's transcripts.
Hey everyone, this is Yvette and we are back with the Schoolhouse Rocked podcast, and this is a really fun one because we are actually on the set filming for Schoolhouse Rocked the movie, and it's so neat to see how the Lord provides just different guests and people for the movie and for the podcast as well. And so you are going to love my guest today. Her name is Zan Tyler, and she is just a sweet, sweet homeschool mom who's have homeschooled, but you're no longer because your kids are grown.
Right, our kids are grown.
So you did homeschool for quite some time, and she has an amazing story. So you are going to be so encouraged by just what God has done in her family and through her family for the homeschool world. So we are going to talk about that today. So Zan, welcome to the podcast. I am really excited to have you today.
Oh, thank you, Yvette. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit about you and your family.
Well, we have three grown kids, six grandchildren, and we homeschooled for 21 years from 1984 to 2005 and homeschooled each of the kids from kindergarten through high school.
So that was back in the day.
That was back in the day for sure.
And you are truly considered in the homeschool world one of the pioneers who really got homeschooling kind of off the ground, and you were very instrumental and homeschooling becoming legal and not just your state of South Carolina, but in many states in addition to that. So let's talk about that because there's so much to tell in your story. Tell us kind of from the beginning how this whole story unfolded for you.
Well, it was 1984, which I just always think is so George Orwellian. and my oldest son was in kindergarten. He was very bright and gifted, but not reading. He was the only one in this little kindergarten of eight that wasn't reading. So I was looking for answers because I had no educational background. I wasn't sure if it was a problem or what he was going through. So a friend of mine just recommended that we hold him back a year, that was normal for boys. They needed a little more time to mature. But another friend of mine, she and her husband were getting their master's at Columbia Bible College, getting ready to the mission field, said, "Zan, I taught in the public schools for many years before I had Nat, and I'm going to homeschool, and I think you should homeschool Ty." And you know the scene from Star Wars where the walls are really, it's really a trash compactor and they start closing in? I just, when she said the word homeschool, I just felt like the walls of her little mobile home at CBC were closing in on me. And I thought, "Lord, if you will just get me out of here, I never want to hear the word homeschool again." I just thought it was the strangest thing I had ever heard. And our family was extroverts, and I just couldn't imagine. But she gave me a book, Homegrown Kids by Dr. Moore. And I took home that book, and all the way home, I'm telling the Lord why I'm never going to homeschool. And I get home and I start reading that book more as a courtesy for my friend than anything else. And it's like the Holy Spirit was just wooing me and softening my heart and showing me what a glorious way to educate homeschooling really is. And the only problem was, this was 1984, and we didn't know one person in the world who homeschooled. There were no organizations, no HSLDA. I think it had actually started on the West Coast, but we certainly didn't know of them on the East Coast. No state organizations, no support groups, no nobody. So I really had nobody to turn to. And so one morning early, I used to walk in the morning early and pray and listen to the Bible on my Walkman. And I really just felt like the Lord was saying, "Okay, I really want you to homeschool your boys." And I just remember saying, "No, I just can't do this." So I ran inside. We went to the public school district in our area. I showed them the testing that Ty should be held back a year, even though he was six. And they said, "Okay." And that was that. And I thought that was the end of the story. Until other people in the school district were getting their orientation packets for kindergarten and I didn't get one. I called the school superintendent. He said, you can't put your first grader in our kindergarten program. We've put him in first grade. And I said, well, private schools are filled at this point. I have no choice. And he said, well, I'm sorry, you cannot do this. So I called my old high school principal, who is now associate superintendent of instruction in the district, and just asked him to write a note to Holtie back. And he said, well, Zan, I just can't do that, which they did those kinds of things all the time. And I said, well, I guess I'm just going to have to homeschool Ty. And it was a threat. It was my trump card. And he said, oh, the school district's gotten so lenient with that kind of thing. So later I found out they'd approved one person in the history of the district, and she was a certified teacher. I had been an economics major in college I had planned going to law school until Joe proposed and we got married and had children instead. And so I did not have the educational background they were looking for. So we had to hire an attorney just to find out what the law was. The local school district nor the State Department of Education would give us the law. There's no internet, no Mr. Google, no organizations, no other way to find it out. So we hired him. We submitted our application. It was about 5 inches thick, everything they wanted from me at that point, and they denied my application. So we had to call our attorney again. He said, oh, now you appeal to the state board. They will deny you. They will uphold whatever the local school board did. And I said, what then? He said, you'll end up in family court. And I said, what then? And he said, well, I don't know, honey. And so I'm telling the Lord, I told you this was not a good idea. So in the middle of all of this, I had a thought. The state superintendent of education had actually observed my mother's public school classroom. She was a fourth grade teacher when he was getting his PhD. And I was in the fourth grade. And so I saw him every day after school for several months. So I called Dr. Williams. I said, Dr. Williams, this is Ann Tyler. I'm Sybil Peters' daughter. I have a problem. Can I come see you? So I went up there, just explained my predicament. All I wanted to do was hold tight back a year. The school district said yes. Then they said no. Private schools were filled. Then they denied my application to homeschool. What am I going to do? And he looked at me and he said, well, if you continue down this path, Zan, I'll have you put in jail for truancy. Mm. And so that was sort of the watershed moment for me. And I said, well, then you'll just have to put me in jail.
Which at that point, I would say most parents would probably just say, okay, they would throw their hands up, give up and say, all right.
You know, I think that was just when the Lord took over for me. There's the verse in Acts that says, don't fear when you're brought before governors or, mm-hmm. you know, because I'll tell you what to say. Right. It was really an out-of-body experience mm-hmm. because I said, then Dr. Williams, you'll have to put me in jail. And I'm thinking, who just said that? It was really like an out-of-body experience. But I knew the Lord had been calling me. And in that moment, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but he confirmed that mm-hmm. to me.
It's so neat to have just the peace of God when he asks us to do everything. And we've talked a whole lot about this on the podcast, is that when God calls you to something, he's going to provide everything that you need, and he is going to pave the way for you.
That's
whether
right.
it's homeschooling or, you know, a new job or a move across the country or whatever it is, he's going to provide the way. He's going to pave that road. And so I love that you were just obedient and you were willing to listen to what God was calling you, because you have now since then impacted so many families. So continue on. Well, let me ask you this first. How did your husband, Joe, how did he respond to this whole idea of homeschooling? Was he all in favor of it? Was he a little resistant? What was his response?
Well, I'll tell you now that Joe does a workshop called You Want to What? Confessions of a Reluctant Homeschool Dad. So we've always had a great marriage. Mm-hmm. And so our communication, Joe's a great communicator. And so we could always talk. And basically what he said to me was, I know how much you love the Lord and I know how much you love the kids. So I totally trust you, but I think this is the craziest thing we've ever done. And he finally said, well, if it's numbers and colors, you can't mess up a kid too much in kindergarten. And then we laughed because lo and behold, I was colorblind and we didn't know yet. but he was very supportive of me. Mm-hmm. He just thought the idea of homeschooling was nuts.
So what was his response when you started to get into a little bit of legal trouble?
Then we were just all in it together.
Okay. Yeah. Which is how it should be.
Yes, yes. So he ate tons of pizza. I should say this. No man should have to eat as much pizza during those early years of homeschooling as Joe did.
Yep. You were one busy mama.
Yeah.
So how did the rest of the story transpire from there?
Well, it was interesting because being the brave, noble person I was, we had decided not to tell either set of parents we were going to homeschool. And Joe said, you know, you're going to have to tell them at some point. It's kind of like being pregnant. People will recognize at some point that something's going on. And I said, well, when the time comes, I'll talk about it. I just had no more emotional bandwidth. So when I was threatened with jail, then that forced the conversation because my parents were very involved in the whole fabric of Columbia, not social life, but just community life. Mm-hmm. And Dad was, in addition to his profession and being a lawyer, he was chairman of the board of the Baptist Hospital System. So he was very, I knew that the newspapers would not say, peon homeschool mother Zan Tyler goes to jail. It would say, John Peter's daughter goes to jail. And so I knew I needed to tell them. So I go by to tell them, and I hold it together, mom, dad, I'm going to homeschool Ty. Of course, they don't know what it is. I barely know what it is.
Right.
And I've been threatened with jail, and my hearing is on Tuesday. I didn't want you to read about it in the newspaper. And then I just lost it. I was hysterical, and I left. And my daddy, we've always been so close. He just went to be with the Lord. But he was just so mad I'd been treated that way. Mm. And as God in his very kind providence would have it, he was speaking at a hospital function the next night with Nancy Thurman, who was the wife of Senator Strom Thurmond, who was a legend in South Carolina politics, served in the Senate for 50 or so years. And I had worked for him when I was in high school. It was the first year of the 18-year-old vote, and I was female to boot. So I did television commercials with him and toured the state with fundraisers with him and his team. And so I knew him, and I had called his office and gotten no response. So Dad said to Mrs. Thurman that night, Zan needs help from the senator now. So she called his chief of staff, who said, we'll overnight a letter to Charlie Williams, the state superintendent of education, telling him to approve the program. But the next day, we got a call from his chief of staff saying that the senator was actually going to fly down and meet personally with Charlie Williams, who was the state superintendent of education. So when Senator Thurman, the legend, walks in and tells Dr. Williams, her program is legal, we've looked into it, you need to approve it, then everything changed. And so the threats of jail were averted, and the state board approved my program. And we homeschooled that first year. It was still very tough. We had policemen riding up and down our streets of a very quiet neighborhood. We assumed to make sure that we were inside having school and at home. And we had threatening phone calls and neighbors.
From the school board?
Well, you know, at first we didn't know. And this is before caller ID and cell phones and all of this. So Bell South had just come out with this very expensive callback system. You could see who called you. I told Joe, I said, I want to pay for this. We had no money at this point, legal fees and all. And he said, okay, you're paranoid, but we'll do it. And it was school districts. And it was not just my own. Mm. It was other school districts in the state calling me, wanting personal information, seeing if I answered the phone. It was crazy. But that year, our goal was just to get Ty ready for first grade. Mm-hmm. But the things that we saw happening in our home, even with all the pressure, the legal pressure outside of the home, there was just this, not magic, that's the wrong word, but this just incredible depth building in our home that we had never had before, even though I was a stay-at-home mother up until that point. Mm-hmm. So our vision for homeschooling began to grow a little bit, and legal threats were starting to pour in, and the State Department of Education was getting ready to promulgate very negative regulations. And so it just grew into an 8-year struggle, really, or battle, where for 8 years, our family was either in court or in the legislature fighting for good homeschool laws in South Carolina.
And at that point, you knew you weren't just fighting for yourself. You
That's
were
wrong.
Fighting for others who would come into homeschooling.
Yes, that's right.
And through that time, did you start to meet other families who were homeschooling?
Yes, okay. Yes. I remember we went to the first conference in Atlanta, and I think there were seven families from South Carolina there, which I had no idea. We were delighted to see seven, mm-hmm. but everybody was so nervous. Nobody would give out their phone numbers or their last names because we were so afraid that there was somebody from the government there. They were scary times. But during that first year, Joe and I began to keep a database of people who people were starting to call us in from all over the country. It was kind of strange. It was think tanks and attorneys and people looking to move to South Carolina who may have already started homeschooling in another state where there was no threat. So we just started collecting names of people who had heard of homeschooling. We weren't necessarily looking for homeschoolers, just people who had heard of it. So we started growing this database, which came in handy then in December of 1985, a year later, when we got the information that the State Department was getting ready to promulgate the regulations that would require teaching parents to either have a college degree and only use state-approved text. So that gave us a little bit of list to begin building that grassroots movement with.
So how did homeschooling change your family?
Oh my goodness, I feel like Shakespeare, let me count ways. it just this closeness, this, we were close to begin with, I can't explain it, just a deeper intimacy. It made the kids closer. The most dramatic change for me is I began to notice my boy's spiritual gifts. There was no time for that kind of observation before, but even though they were young, I really began to, I believe that the Lord gave me insight into things that the boys were capable of spiritually in the way they thought. Like, for instance, we had been praying just for our neighbors that we'd have a chance to witness. And one day during our first few weeks of homeschooling, they were out playing. I called them in, they were riding their bikes in the driveway, I said, and he didn't come. And I said, Ty, honey, you have to obey me the first time or homeschooling is not going to work. And he said, well, Mom, did you see that little boy on the bicycle? He said, we've been praying about Jesus, sharing Jesus. I'd never seen him in our neighborhood. I was afraid I'd never see him again. And I just needed to tell him about Jesus.
Wow.
And it was through instances of being together so much that I began to see his heart to really share the gospel, even as a young little boy. And then my other son, who is now an attorney, was always very thoughtful. Like when Joe and I went to our first homeschool conference in Atlanta conference, I use that word very lightly. There were like maybe 60 people there from 10 states or 5 states, wow, or something. My sister took John and Ty up to Stone Mountain, and they were 6 and 4. And John, they found, we'd been learning the children's catechism, and they found this footprint that looked like a huge footprint in the mountain. And Ty said, John, look at this. This is so big, it must be God's. And 4-year-old little John says, Ty, God is a spirit and hath not a body like man. Oh my goodness. And so I began to see their spiritual depth really mm-hmm. blossom. And that has always been one of the greatest parts of homeschooling to me, is that we can prepare our kids to take their place in the world, mm-hmm. not just academically gifted and other gifts, but their spiritual gifts. The church just needs mature believers now, people who can speak truth.
Yeah, that's right. So kind of take us down the road of what homeschooling looked like. You say you went to these conventions, and there were about 60 people there, you know, to what it is today. Because now you go and you've got 6,000-7,000 people or more at some conventions. And it has changed dramatically, obviously. And it's really interesting because we're going into our 9th year of homeschooling. But when we came into homeschooling 9 years ago, it was very similar to what it is now. You know, it was very accepted
right,
in culture.
Right.
It's not awkward for us to go to the grocery store in the middle of the day. And when people say, you know, oh, are you off of school today? And my girls say, no, we're homeschooled. And typically people will respond with, oh, wow, that's great. I wish I could homeschool.
Or, right.
You
yes.
know, my sister homeschools or my daughter homeschools. I mean, everybody knows somebody who homeschools.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
But obviously it wasn't that way for you.
That's right.
And so kind of take us through what it was like for you in those beginning years and other families to what homeschooling has become today.
I have such a vivid memory of having homeschooled for about 6 months and being in tears one morning during my quiet time, just saying, Lord, remember me, this person you made so extroverted. I now have no friends. There were people in the neighborhood who would no longer speak to us, people in our church who were suspicious. I mean, this was 1984, and like I say, we really did. When I said we knew nobody when we started, we knew nobody when we started. And so there was just no support and nobody for the kids to share that experience with. Now, as the year progressed and we went into the second year, then we found friends. I mean, it wasn't unusual for us to drive to Greenville to see another homeschool family, which was 100 miles away, or Charleston. And then we began to develop a few friends and a little bit of a community. I will say this, that the community that developed was very, very close. And then when we were threatened in 1985, regulations from the State Department, we started pulling the group together and sending mailings out. And then somebody gave us an organization that had already the 501c3 status they weren't using anymore. We took that over and then formed the first homeschooling organization in South Carolina. So it was definitely hard. It was just hard. But we knew the Lord had called us. And then to watch it grow step by step, we had the first public hearing in South Carolina in 1986, and we actually had about 400 people show up for that, which was really amazing. We had no idea. We just sent out this blind list to all this list we had been amassing, a mailing, and we had all these people show up, and it was pretty amazing. That was a ton of people.
That is a lot, because that's before the days of even email.
That's right.
Certainly didn't have social media.
Email, no. And that was the days before fax. It was by phone or mail. Mm-hmm. And so it was very interesting. So it was the Lord. And then eventually we started going to the National Leadership Conference. And it was people from a lot of other states who had, everybody was going through their own set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. And some people were very free, like in Georgia or North Carolina. Other people were like us in South Carolina, where we were very threatened and it was very hard. But that was our peer group, and that sort of was what the Lord gave us to just to keep us going, that fellowship we needed to keep going. I can remember the first time Joe and I were asked to go to Japan to speak at a conference there, and it wasn't for expats, it was for Japanese. I sat on the plane, and all of a sudden, I just started crying because I looked at Joe and I said, "You remember when we first started homeschooling, all people wanted to do was shut me up, mm-hmm. you know, make her be quiet, stop talking about this, go away." And the fact that somebody was paying us to fly halfway across the world to talk to them about homeschooling, it was just overwhelming. That's one of those moments that will just always be emblazoned in my mind. But it was like a revival movement. The Lord just kept raising people up and up and up, and it got bigger and bigger. And it was this grassroots groundswell. Mm-hmm. And that was one reason you know it's really the Holy Spirit, because there's no other explanation for it.
Schoolhouse Rocked is so grateful to be sponsored by the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, known to most as HSLDA. Did you know that HSLDA can make homeschooling easier for you? Well, they can. From preschool advice to interactive online courses to high school diplomas and everything in between, HSLDA offers encouraging support, practical resources, and personalized answers. Learn about all the benefits for your family at hslda.org/join today. That's hslda.org/join today.
So you've been through the whole process of helping to make it legal. Where do you see homeschooling going in the future? Do you see that our freedoms are in jeopardy at all, or do you think that we will be able to continue on with our freedom? And how can people make sure that our freedom stays?
You know, the best marriages are those, Joe always says, it's not that the grass is greener on mm-hmm. the other side, it's the grass is greenest where you water it and fertilize it. And so we shouldn't ever take our marriages for granted. We mm-hmm. should never take our freedom for granted. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to be an innocent person who was threatened legally. And I will tell you, that is not fun. I never want another mother to go through what we went through. It was horrible, wondering at night if somebody was going to take my kids, if a neighbor was going to turn us into the Department of Social Services for something. It was extremely stressful. So my love for freedom is very not guarded, but it's in the context of knowing we can lose it and knowing what that feels like. Ronald Reagan said, it only takes a generation to lose our freedom. And then there's the quote, all we need to lose our freedom is for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. Yeah. So I think it's very easy to become complacent when it seems so easy. But we need to remember we have enemies, whether it's the National Education Association or the School Administrators Association. There are people out there who think that the fact that we can homeschool our children is the worst thing that has ever happened to the culture. We think it's the best thing that's ever happened to the culture.
But they want control of our children.
So we need to remember, we were talking earlier today about this. I was speaking at a leadership forum sponsored by Clemson University in South Carolina. And I was the homeschool, this was the education segment. I was the homeschool spokesman. And after it was over, this woman asked me, she said, "Don't you feel guilty for homeschooling?" And I said, "Well, I have felt a lot of emotions over homeschooling, but guilt is not one of them." "Why?" And she said, "Because you've robbed the school district of all the money the state would have given them for your children. You've robbed the school district of kids who probably would have good test scores, because you've also robbed the school district of involved parents, all of these things which we need." And so I got real quiet. And I said, "Well, who do you think my kids belong to?" Well, she had no answer. And so I read her this. This shows what my life was like. I used to travel with this in my purse. I had no idea I was going to talk about that this day. So I read her this statement. I'm going to read it to you just because this is where my life was. "The fundamental theory of liberty upon which all governments in this union repose excludes any general power of the state to standardize its children by forcing them to accept instruction from public teachers only. The child is not the mere creature of the state. Mm. Those who nurture him and direct his destiny have the right, coupled with a high duty, to recognize and prepare him for additional obligations." So she looked at me like, "Where did you get that right-wing Christian propaganda?" She said, "Where did you get that?" I said, "From the United States Supreme Court, Pierce versus Society of Sisters, and 1925, and I remember thinking then, here is the problem with our society. Nobody knows anymore that children don't belong to the state. Mm-hmm. When you have to tell an audience that the child is not the mere creature of the state, and that is news to them, we are in trouble as a culture. So we have got to educate people as to what freedom and liberty is all about, what the Constitution is all about, parental rights, and who our kids belong to. That's very elementary. Socialism and Marxism would have us believe our kids belong to the government.
That's right. That's right. We have a couple minutes left. And in these last few minutes, I would love for you to talk about, because I know you've been very involved in your state organization, and how can people get involved in their own state organization or in, you know, the United States as a whole to keep the freedoms that we have for homeschooling? And why do these state organizations even exist?
The state organizations have done the homeschooling community such a great service in watching each state legislature by legislature and knowing when and where the threats come up. So I would invite and encourage every homeschooler to join their state group. And their state group will be the legislative watchdog. And then go to your state day at the Capitol. Most states have that. Some states don't. Start one if you don't. I would tell you to get to know your legislator and your state senator. And that is not hard to do. They want to know you as a constituent. Homeschool kids are the best thing we have going for us because they're polite and articulate and well-educated. It's like one representative said to me, "Zan, now that I see the artwork, I want to know the artist." And so we need to do that. We need to take our kids with us to vote. We need to get them involved with pro-life, pro-family candidates. My boys started working campaigns with me when they were little. We would hold out signs in the rain. You know, politics is not glamorous, but it is really necessary. And then on, you know, during the presidential election, every presidential election, we would have a blank map of the states and we would color a state red if it went to the Republican candidate, blue if it went to the Democrat, and we'd mark in the number of electoral votes. And explain to your kids the Electoral College. There's a great movement afoot to get rid of it. It would destroy our Republican form of government. So I would just say, be involved. If it's uncomfortable, just decide you're going to live out of your comfort zone. Heidi's podcast is a great podcast. She keeps us up politically with what's going on, and your state organization will do that. Join HSLDA as well. Mm-hmm. They've been a great safeguard for homeschooling parents.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, you're right. Heidi St. John, her podcast, the Heidi St. John podcast, is excellent. She often talks about just things that are going on in the culture, and kind of I get all my news from her.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
I listen to it every day. But yes, people can actually go to the Schoolhouse Rocked website, and there's a drop down that talks about state organizations, and people can easily find their own state organization on there.
Thank you.
Don't even have to go anywhere else. Just go straight to the Schoolhouse Rocked website. But Zan, thank you. Thank you for everything you've done, everything that you and your family have sacrificed for the freedoms that we enjoy today as homeschoolers. You are a homeschool legend, and I am so excited to be sitting here with you. So thank you for your time today.
It has been my privilege. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Where can people find you besides right here in the coffee shop?
ZanTyler.com.
ZanTyler.com.
Yes.
Okay, and we'll link to that in the show notes.
Okay, that's great.
All right, thanks, Zan.
Thank you for listening. If you guys want to know how you can be praying for us, or if you would like to support the ministry of Schoolhouse Rocked, go to schoolhouserocked.com.